supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, mulberries. People complain about them in the spring when the abundant fruit stains sidewalks. But it turns out that mulberries are not only edible, there are some real gems out there. Our fruit expert, Lee Reich, will come in with a question of the week to tell you how to find the right mulberry for you. Otherwise, it's a phone call show, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. We're taking that heap and helping at 1-888-346-9499. Brian, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Brian. How are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good. How about you?
I am doing just fine, sir. Where is Brian pretty good?
Los Angeles, California.
What kind of summer have you folks had?
It's been cool until about the last 3 or 4 weeks, and then it's been blazing hot.
Because I've spent a lot of time in L.A., a ton of time, actually, but almost all of it in the winter, and it's been just remarkably pleasant.
That's the best time of year here.
Absolutely. So what can we do for Brian in Los Angeles?
Well, so we garden a good deal, and this year we've had a sort of tomato catastrophe. In a place where we planted tomatoes with great success in the past, we planted them again, and they've come up very, very leggy, pale, not fully showing leaf growth, and with only a few underdeveloped pieces of fruit on them. The only variables that I can think of are two. One is that in order to protect them from the voracious ground squirrels who live around here, we got some planter boxes, and the planter boxes have a kind of wicking up from the bottom watering arrangement.
Oh, that's it.
Is that it?
Yeah. Those things are death on a stick, man.
So what's the problem?
One of the problems with these automatic watering systems, in my experience, is first of all, depending on the design, they tend to be mosquito breeding machines. And secondly, they keep the root zone too wet.
Mm-hmm.
If the root zone is constantly wet, the tomato will be very unhappy, and it can cause any variety of problems.
Mm-hmm.
Legginess, however, typically that's a lack of sunshine. Are they getting?
Oh yeah, they get plenty of sun. And again, they're in exactly the same place where we've grown them with great success in the past. Nice, rich, plump red fruit, lots of it, and the same sun. So the sun isn't the difference.
What was different last year?
Well, two things. One is that they weren't in the boxes. They were in pots where they did much better. And second, when we planted them this year, we ran out of the ordinary planting soil and put a lot more commercial compost.
What's commercial compost?
I mean, it was ordinary stuff that we bomb. It calls itself organic, whatever that means.
Was it sitting in the sun, the bag?
In the bag?
Yeah.
It's possible, yeah.
See, one of the problems with... it's easier to buy bulk compost that's sitting out in a big pile.
Mm-hmm.
What happens at garden centers and nurseries, and even outside of high-end supermarkets where they sell really high-end compost and potting soils, is the stuff cooks in these bags. And what happens when the temperature gets above 120, 140 degrees, all of the living organisms in the compost are killed.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they give off toxic remnants when they die. So I think the anonymous compost in a bag, if it were cooked, could be part of the problem. But
mm-hmm.
I really personally despise these automatic watering systems.
Interesting.
You have to get like a wooden dowel and go and stick it down to the bottom of the box and see if it's sopping wet down there.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, is there a way you can turn it off?
Well, actually, we tested that the other day. The soil wasn't what I would call wet. It was thoroughly moist.
Now that's wet.
Yeah. Always. Okay.
But the best way to water plants is to give them 1 inch of water a week.
Mm-hmm.
All at once, and then let them go through the process of absorbing that over a couple days, dry out over a couple of days, and repeat. Now, depending on the size of the container, this full sun, you may need to do that two or three times a week. You can actually give yourself more wiggle room if you have a nice organic mulch like shredded leaves or straw or pine straw on top.
I see.
And it was just topsoil and this suspicious compost?
Yep, that was it.
I would suggest you try to find some high-quality compost. There's some real premium compost out there in bags. And just add that to the surface. Turn off the fancy Dan watering. Start watering from above. Make sure the plants dry out for a day in between waterings. And I would suggest getting a nice liquid fish and seaweed fertilizer.
Okay.
There's something about the fertilizers from the ocean, the combination of fish and seaweed, that these fruiting plants really respond to well. And for the squirrels, just make sure your tomatoes are caged and that there's a top on the cage that you can just take off with a twist tie, but to keep the servants of Satan out. That's the easiest thing.
Okay.
All right, man?
Terrific. Thanks for your help, Mike. I really appreciate it.
Good luck, Bri.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Monica, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am doing well, Monica. How are you?
I'm doing good, thanks.
And where is Monica doing good?
Manasquan, New Jersey.
Cape May to Manasquan.
You got it.
All right. Very good. A famous place. What can we do for Monica in Manasquan?
Well, we're near the beach here, and we have small property lots. Ours is 50 by 150. And the person who owned our house before us planted a beautiful, I think it's a Japanese red maple tree.
Okay.
It's about three stories high now.
Really? Congratulations.
And it's right on the property line between my neighbor and I. And I'm planning on putting a fence up. And I had a landscape architect come and look. And he said I could put a fence post within 1 foot of the tree trunk of this tree. But he also is trying to sell me the fence. So I don't know whether that's such a good idea. I mean, it's a beautiful tree, and I really, you know, don't want to ruin it.
A purpose of the fence?
Privacy.
What kind of fencing material?
It's going to be white PVC.
Ooh.
That plastic.
Oh.
I know.
That stuff is really toxic.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. PVC is polyvinyl chloride. It's chlorine.
Okay.
It's bleach. It's solid bleach.
Well, it's not my first choice, but everyone around here does it because of the weather.
Everybody smoked in the
60s. That's true.
I'd rather you use inexpensive pine, paint it white, and just know that you'll replace it in 12 years.
Okay. I mean, I'm not against doing that. I mean,
this is really nasty stuff.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you told me that.
PVC. So is the fence going to end on both sides of the tree and the tree become?
No, it's only going to have the fence on one side of it. I live on a corner, and we can only have fencing up to a certain part of our lot.
So this is just for visual privacy.
Yeah, it's to separate our backyard from our next-door neighbors.
Basically, trees can survive stuff being pounded into the ground, impacting their roots, which this will certainly do. I'm just not sure I see a need. Why can't the furthest fence post be like 6 feet away from the tree or 3 feet away from the tree?
We'll be able to see our neighbor's backyard.
No. The fence can go all the way up to the tree. But there are ways to attach. You can attach the fence to the tree. You could use like almost like hook and eyelets. You could screw stuff into the tree and then have a different attachment coming off the fence. And you could actually attach the side of the fence to the side of the tree. That's not going to do nearly as much damage as
right,
pounding
no
something into the root system. Red maples tend to be kind of fragile trees. I'm thrilled that this one has survived and done so well because, you know, the Jersey Shore climate, any climate near an ocean, is very challenging for trees because of the sustained high winds that are fairly frequent. So if it were a hardier tree, I'd say maybe. It is. It's much less invasive for a tree to have a couple of bolts screwed into it than it is to take a chance of severing a major root.
Well, say the fence guy comes out. How close would you recommend the post to be dug?
This is the design issue. This is where you need somebody who's a little bit more clever than the average bear. And the further away they can make it, the better. Look up at the canopy of the tree. Look up at how far the branches go out and how the branches are arranged. That is duplicated underground.
Okay.
So there is an extensive root system that goes out in all directions. So it's perfectly logical that you can sever one of the roots and the tree will be all right. But Japanese maples, to me, are always looking for an excuse to die. And I think this calls for cleverness. I would like to see the closest post be 4 or 5 feet away from the trunk.
Okay.
Not a foot.
All right. Okay, great. I really appreciate that. And I will ditch the PVC idea and go with the wood idea.
The earth would thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Mike. All right, thank you, Monica.
I appreciate it. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll appear at the Silverside Church Green Fair in Wilmington, Delaware on Saturday, September 15th at 10:30 and 12:30, and at the Mount Laurel, New Jersey Library on Sunday, October 6th at 1 and 3. But don't go looking for all the details at the events and appearances section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with lots more of your fabulous phone calls and the reason red crepe myrtles may change their color to white. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Burpee, a national supplier of seeds, plants, and bulbs, supports You Bet Your Garden and reminds growers that now is the time to start fall crops like broccoli, cabbage, and cauliflower, and to get ready for garlic planting. More information at burpee.com.
You're listening to WHYY-FM.
A stroke can rob us of our ability to speak, to move, to understand. The new Mainline Health Neurovascular Center at Bryn Mawr Hospital uses an interventional approach to the rapid treatment of stroke and aneurysm. Formed in collaboration with stroke experts from Jefferson's Faculty Practice Plan and the Jefferson Neuroscience Network, they use minimally invasive techniques to avoid open brain surgery, to prevent disabilities, and to save lives. The Mainline Health Neurovascular Center at Bryn Mawr Hospital supports WHYY.
The WHYY forecast, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers this afternoon and a high near 85 degrees. Tonight, cloudy with a chance of rain and a low near 67. It's 80 degrees in Center City, Philadelphia at 1119. This is WHYY.
Thinking about having a kid? Consider the costs.
One is a hobby. Two, it's getting real. Three, you're in a minivan. It's expensive. Daycare, diapers, clothes, mommy and me, gymnastics. Ugh, goes on.
I'm Adrienne Hill. Baby-proofing your finances. That's next time on Marketplace Money from APM.
This afternoon at 3 on WHYY.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Perhaps, just perhaps, you think mulberries are nothing but a springtime annoyance when they drop their fruits all over the place. Well, in the question of the week later on, we will tell you about some mulberries that outrival blueberries and raspberries for their very special flavor. Mostly, however, it's a phone call show, so you know what that means. We're taking that heap and helping of your telecommunicated questions, comments, tips, tricks, etc. at 1-888-346-9499. Judy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Well, thank you, Judy. Where are you?
I'm in Oklahoma City.
Oh, okay. Oh, my heart goes out to you guys. I hope you got some rain. I hope it's not as hot as it was.
It was beautiful last night for a walk in the garden.
There you go. That's the best thing I could hear. All right, what can we do for Judy in Oklahoma City?
I'm having a wedding in April, and I'm wanting to plant something fabulous in front of my house, but it's somewhere between my house and the street is a great big humongous oak tree, and I want to be able to have something that's going to pop with some color.
Mm-hmm.
Something just that will look great from the street.
Okay, so who's getting married?
My son.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. And you said April of next year.
Yes, sir. And I want to, when I listen to your show, you always say in Oklahoma, this is the time of year to plant a tree so it can be established for next spring.
You guys and most of my listeners still have a solid 6 weeks of planting time to plant new trees and shrubs, and this is a great time of year to plant them, provided you can find exactly what you want, because you're always dealing with leftovers. Garden centers don't have springtime plants around deliberately right now. They have them because they didn't sell them in the spring. And it's always dicey to get a new tree or shrub to bloom reliably. Generally, you want them to be 2 or 3 years into their cycle. And then they'll have the biomass, they'll be acclimated, because you don't have a gentle climate. I hate to break this to you, Judy. Were you a normal person, and we had 2 years to do this, I would suggest a lot of azaleas. Azaleas should bloom at that time of year, although, you know, any flowering shrub, timing is, you know, nature can play tricks on you. So it will be very hard to get these plants established. But I have a couple of other suggestions.
I have a pencil ready.
One is spring bulbs. Daffodils, tulips, things that you plant in the fall in your climate. You would plant them after Halloween. They would bloom very reliably their first year in the ground. And when you plant spring bulbs, the best way to do it is in bulk, literally hundreds of daffodils or hundreds of tulips, and it makes a great impression. Spring bulbs love to be crowded. If you just search bulb gardens in Holland, the Floriade parks, and see the density of the plantings they have and the effect that you get. And
I've been doing everything wrong. I've spread out my daffodils like probably 6 or 8 inches apart.
Do you like the show you get?
Well,
there's no right or wrong, but
okay.
If you're going for a show, if you really want to blow people away, I would say daffodils and tulips, so that you're getting a long blooming time, you know, no matter what the season brings, you'll have something in great bloom. And anything you don't like, go out and cut it back, you know.
Okay.
Because when the stuff that you want comes up, don't be afraid to remove other things to really make it look good. Now, your other option, which would be even less risky, would be to get a whole range of really nice-looking identical planters, containers. Fill them with half soil-free mix and half compost, and in the spring, like a week, 2 weeks before the wedding, go out and buy azaleas in bloom. Put the order in now, and then fill the containers with these plants, and you can control the situation a lot better, and maybe you can even give the plants away, if you like, to the wedding guests. Or if not, then you can try putting them in the ground. But again, anything you put in the ground is going to need triple the attention from you that it would if that oak tree was not there.
Okay.
But those are your best bets for that time of year. Spring blooming,
you're just wonderful.
Spring blooming shrubs, and I think azaleas are going to give you your best look for that time of year. And spring bulbs, you know, they speak of spring, an April wedding. April showers bring May flowers. I mean, spring bulbs are the flower of that season.
That's wonderful. I love you.
I love you, too. All right, and send us pictures of whatever you wind up doing.
You never know what you might find.
All right.
Thank you so much, Mike.
My pleasure, Judy. Take care. Good luck and congratulations again.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
One, 888-346-9499. Michael, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am doing well, Michael. How are you?
I am fine.
And where is Michael Fine?
In Philadelphia, Fishtown specifically.
Fishtown. Okay. I went to high school with kids from Fishtown. Yeah, it was a different Fishtown then. You're part of the trendy Fishtown, aren't you?
That's what they tell me.
Yeah. I'm glad to see the trolleys running up and down Girard Avenue. That just makes me so happy again. All right, what can we do for Michael in Fishtown?
Well, I had a mulberry tree in my backyard, and we cut it down because it was just, you can understand probably, dropping a lot of fruit and attracting mosquitoes and squirrels, and just wasn't very pleasant.
It was not attracting mosquitoes. It was attracting squirrels, and they do drop a lot of fruit.
In any case, we cut it down just because it was not, it was taken over the yard.
They do that. They do that, yeah.
Yeah, and the root system seems to be pretty robust.
And when did you cut it down?
Last fall, I guess.
And it hasn't tried to regrow?
Yes, it is trying to regrow.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Part of my question. I'd like to plant something else there because it's just this one place that is perfect in the yard for like a dogwood tree or something like that.
Sure.
Or,
mm-hmm.
Or if you had something you wanted to recommend. But I don't, going on the internet, I'm kind of asking questions. Can you do that? Can you plant something where another tree was? And
the answer is yes, if you remove the old stump.
But then the root system seems to be pretty substantial, and I'm just not sure what's going to happen with that.
Well, first of all, do you think you have the ability to, like, take an old chainsaw or some shovels and get under there and get some of this stump out? And do you think you could do that without doing structural damage to any buildings or walls or anything like that?
Yes, I could.
Okay, because the more of the stump, and the more of the roots you remove, the faster your regrowth problem will be over, and the more planting opportunities you have. Now, it's going to be sending up suck. Is it just resprouting from the trunk, or is it trying to resprout from the root system as well?
Just the trunk.
Okay, excellent. And have you cut it back again?
I have, yes.
Okay, good. Keep cutting it back. You'll probably not be able to do much this year unless you want to bite the bullet and get some, get some friends over, get some bow saws, get an old chainsaw, and take the stump out of the ground. The root system that's left behind may try to vigorously send up some new shoots. You can just prune those off. That's not going to be an issue. By removing the stump, then you can put a new tree in the ground. Fall is a great time to do this, by the way. The survival rate for new trees in the fall, planted in the fall, is much better than in the spring.
Do you think there's anything I should do once the roots and stump are removed to prep the area?
No. That's an old mistake that people were told to make to improve the soil in advance. But you need this tree to grow in what you have out back. So you'll do a little research. You'll select a good tree for the area. If it's a dogwood, it needs morning sun and afternoon shade. Okay?
Right.
So you want to do your research. Make sure the conditions are right. When you get the tree, if it's bald and burlapped, remove and discard all the wrappings and plant it high in the ground. The new rule is to dig a wide hole but not a deep one.
Mm-hmm.
You want to see the root flare where the trunk goes off into the sections of roots. You want to see that above ground. And then you want to refill your hole with the, quote, native soil you took out. And then around the tree is a mulch. You can put down an inch or two of really nice compost or shredded leaves. But you don't want to improve the soil in the hole because we've found over the years that the root system stays in that island of nice soil. It's kind of like if you have a child who graduates college and you put a plasma TV in their room. They're not going to go far from home, but you need them to.
And I understand.
And you need these roots to spread out and infiltrate through your yard. So when they're in the ground, they're in the ground, and all the soil is the same. But you can improve the soil on top of the soil. And that'll keep the tree happy and well-fed and very comfortable. And any new tree needs to be very well watered during its first entire year. And after you install it, no matter what time of year, let a hose drip at the base just very slowly for like 24 hours.
All right.
But I think because this is such a vigorous regrower, the time you invest in pulling the stump and as many of the roots will be triply rewarded.
Great.
All right, man?
That sounds great. Good. I'm going to tackle that this fall.
All right, get to work.
Thank you very much, Mike.
All right, take care, man.
All right, bye.
1-888-346-9499. Gigi, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, thank you.
Well, thank you, Gigi. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks so much.
Well, thank you. Where are you?
I'm in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Where?
I would say 17th Street, between, right after Washington Avenue.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Washington Avenue is a major boulevard.
Yes.
Great Vietnamese restaurants a little lower down on Washington Avenue. Okay, so what can we do for Gigi in South Philly?
Yes. Well, this is my first year attempting to grow vegetables, and I'm very happy with it. But my question is, I have two gardens. One is a share plot on someone's land, and the other one is in my backyard in a potted garden.
Okay.
I'm not using pesticides for either one.
Good.
However, the one in my backyard has been speckled with holes and little yellow spots.
The plants. Yeah.
However, I was able to successfully grow a cucumber plant. The cucumber plant is growing in a cedar chest.
A cedar chest?
Yeah, a trunk. It was a trunk.
Oh, my goodness. Those are like family heirlooms.
I punched holes in the bottom of it.
Oh! That was somebody's, like, wedding blanket was in there. Where'd you get it?
I from an auction. I just had it with a bunch of papers.
It expensive?
No, I got it from an auction. So, no, and it wasn't like a very high-quality cedar chest.
Mm-hmm.
It was a small one. But I punched holes in the bottom of it, and I made it a container. And then the rest I'm using pretty much plastic pots.
The cedar chest, you know, even a small cedar chest is pretty big. What did you fill it with?
Well, that's my question. I use Miracle-Gro potting soil, and I heard
To fill the entire chest?
Yeah, I bought the big. They have really, really large.
I was
going to
say
bags.
That must have been expensive.
It was about 1.5 bags because I got the largest bag that they have.
And so you used Miracle-Gro potting soil, which is soil-free mix with a little bit of chemical fertilizer mixed in.
Yeah.
And you didn't use anything else in there?
I had some plant food that I put a little bit in, but then I got nervous and thought maybe I was overdoing it.
Okay. Chemical plant food, natural plant food?
Organic.
Okay, good. And what kind of organic fertilizer do you have? Granular, liquid?
What I used were little beads, granular.
You sure it's organic?
I'm going to say it is.
No, I doubt it is. Okay, so here's the deal. If you had gone to our website before you filled your containers, you would have been advised, obviously, not to get Miracle-Gro potting soil, but to get potting soil, but to use 2/3 potting soil and 1/3 compost. That will help. Your plants are probably, it's probably been very difficult to keep them evenly watered this summer.
Yeah.
The Miracle-Gro, a chemical fertilizer, tends to dehydrate plants, and there's no nutrition in potting soil itself, so we mix compost in with it, and that gives the soil some structure and feeds the plants naturally. So if you can find some good compost, for instance, this would be a great time to put it on the surface of the soil, in your containers, and even in your outside garden.
Okay.
And then next year, don't till up the outside garden. Lay fresh compost on the surface of the soil and get started and freshen up your containers with clean potting soil without the chemical fertilizer in it and some compost. And then anything that's in little beads or jewels, it sounds very suspicious to me.
Mm-hmm.
Get a nice natural organic fertilizer, something that says it is. Fish and seaweed mixes are great for these kind of situations. The insect damage is probably due to the plants being underfed, going through drought and wet cycles, and not having any organic matter in the soil. If you put some organic matter, again, don't mix it in, just add the compost to the top, I imagine they'll perk right up, and you could actually get another month out of them, and some of them would spring back.
Well, I have a question. I've had cucumbers. I've yielded cucumbers, and I've eaten them. Now I'm concerned.
No. We don't like chemical fertilizers because they're high explosives. They tend to attract insects to the plants, but there's no harm to you. It's not like you had sprayed the plants with a dreaded insecticide and then eaten the fruits right away. No, don't even think twice about it. The produce is perfectly healthy, but I want you at the end of this season or at least next season to move up to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
Start using compost, start using organic fertilizers, and you've already had some success this year. That's great. Next year, you'll build on the success. It takes a little while to get really good at this, but it's the ethic of constant improvement. Every year, you're going to do something a little bit better and a little bit cleaner.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you.
All right. Good luck, Jeez.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and ask gardeners who are having a great season to think about donating some of their excess produce to help feed the hungry. Many food banks run summertime produce collection sites, and even the ones that don't would love to work something out with you. So contact your local food bank and see exactly how you can get your surplus squash into the hands of the people who need it most. But don't go looking for the food bank locator at our website just yet, because we'll be right back with good-tasting mulberries and lots more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Burpee, a national supplier of seeds, plants, and bulbs, supports You Bet Your Garden and reminds growers that now is the time to start fall crops like broccoli, cabbage, and cauliflower, and to get ready for garlic planting. More information at burpee.com.
You're listening to WHYY-FM.
The world needs great teachers. Great teachers are in classrooms, nonprofits, community organizations, child advocacy, even government. Arcadia University's School of Education is committed to making great teachers and leaders. Classes now forming for Arcadia Master's and Certificate programs in Early Childhood Ed, Library Science, TESOL, Reading, and more. Classes begin August 29th. Details online at arcadia.edu/great teachers. Arcadia supports WHYY.
On August 27th, the Republican Party will meet in Tampa to nominate Mitt Romney for president. NPR will be there bringing you speeches, interviews, and analysis from inside the arena. I'm Ron Elving. Join us each night for special coverage of the Republican National Convention from NPR News.
Beginning Monday night at 8 on WHYY-FM and WHYY-TV.
It's 81 degrees in Center City, heading up to a high this afternoon of 85 degrees with a chance of showers. Tonight, cloudy with a chance of rain and low near 67. You're listening to WHYY-FM.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to a very surprising question of the week about why some mulberries are just an annoying mess and some others may be some of the best-tasting fruits on the planet. You won't want to miss it, and you won't. It's coming up right after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Jared, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Jared. How are you?
I'm doing great.
And where is Jared doing great?
I'm in San Diego, California.
Oh, of course you're doing great. The most beautiful city in America.
Oh, yeah.
All right, what can we do for Jared in paradise?
So the area that I'm living at right now, it's kind of prone to frost.
Okay, that does happen there, yeah.
A lot of my neighbors, they grow a lot of tropical plants, such as bananas, and some even grow papayas.
Right.
But I'm looking to grow bananas in my area, and I've been watching these videos on how to winterize bananas, and it always calls for a thick layer of mulch as a base layer of the plant.
Well, not really, but continue.
And so what I was wondering is, I was reading your book on how to make compost.
Right.
And you suggested to get a leaf blower shredder.
Right.
And you could use that as to make compost, have the leaves decompose to make decent soil.
Right, and you can also just shred up leaves and use them for winter protection of plants, but there's issues with that. Do you have deciduous trees in your neighborhood?
I do.
Yeah? Okay, so you're in a strange part of San Diego. Now, the banana plants that your neighbors are growing, are these true fruiting bananas? Do they develop clusters of bananas?
They do fruit, yes.
Okay, and the neighbors are near you?
The problem is they're at a little bit higher elevation to where I'm at a lower...
Yeah, and frost settles.
A lot of them are above the frost line, and yes, I'm below the frost line.
Oh, man, that is tough. And you're determined to get fruiting bananas?
Yes.
Because there are what are called hardy bananas.
Yeah.
Where the top part of the plant can be somewhat clipped by frost, but the rootstock never dies, and these plants put on such amazing biomass, you get a full-size banana plant, even if you had a big frost kill.
Yeah.
How often do you actually get a frost over winter, and how cold does it get?
The coldest it gets is about 29 degrees.
Right.
And I'd say frost. Some winters we don't even have any frost.
Right.
We get a frost probably, you know, every 3 weeks, and that wipes out a lot of plants.
Right, right. There are several options that you can do. Here in the north, people grow fig trees beyond the range where they can survive winter. But like the banana plants, the root systems never die. So
yeah.
What they will do is they will literally build little structures around the plant over winter. They'll drive, like, let's say, four big stakes into the ground around the plant. And then they'll wrap burlap around the stakes, not around the plant, and extend it up as high as they can. You might lose a little bit of the very top growth of the plant over winter in a situation like this, but you would preserve much of the biomass. There is also something they do, and I don't know if this can be done with bananas, but a lot of times with a fig, a true old Italian gardener in a cold climate will dig a little trench next to the tree, soak the roots with water until they can rock the tree literally out of the ground, lay it down in the trench, and then cover it with soil and old carpeting and keep it protected that way under, you know, with this insulation over top of it. And then in the spring, after all danger of frost is over, they will lift the plant back up and replant it. And there's never any frost damage on those plants. I just don't know how well banana trees would take that. Your third option is the cheap and tawdry option, which is to go out and get as many sets of incandescent Christmas lights as you can find. Not the new classy LED energy efficient ones, but especially effective for this are, have you seen the Christmas lights that they drape around, the fake icicle lights?
Yeah.
Yeah, and those are warm bulbs. Those are incandescent bulbs. What you would do is you would run an extension cord out to the tree. You would hang the lights up in the very top of the tree, hanging down, which is very easy to do with these kind of dangling icicle lights. And you could either put it on every night so people thought that this was a cool thing you were doing, or you can just watch the weather, and any time the temperature is going to drop below, like, 38 degrees, you would turn the lights on overnight,
yeah,
and that would keep the frost off the tree. I bet you didn't expect that one, did you?
No.
All right, man?
All right, and if I do decide to mulch it with composted leaves, will that break down the plant, or will it be fine?
Now, when you say mulch it, do you mean cover the soil around the base of the plant, or actually pile mulch up against the trunk?
Pile mulch up against the trunk.
Don't do that.
Okay.
Don't do that. That will cause rotting of the trunk of the plant. It'll also give insects and mice and other vermin a chance to eat the side of the banana.
All right.
All right, Jared?
All right. Thank you for your time.
Good luck, sir.
All right. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Nick, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Nick, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well today.
Where is Nick well?
Right outside Philadelphia.
And, oh, so undisclosed location?
No, like the Abington area.
Okay. What can we do for Nick in Abington?
I got a little bit of a strange question for you. I've had a garden, a couple of years, and I've always had problems with rabbits and other types of rodents. So this year I raised it up a little bit, but I'm sure a rabbit, if it still wanted to, could jump in there. But my sister-in-law is a hairdresser, and she came over this year with a bag of hair clippings and told me to put that around my plants. She actually says numerous times people come into her salon requesting hair clippings to use for their gardens for that reason, to keep out rabbits. And I had never heard of that before, but I don't know if it's that, but it seems to be working this year. I haven't had any problems at all.
Well, first of all, many things come to mind. The first thing is I hope you're not using hair that was treated and dyed and permed.
Yeah, that I couldn't tell you.
Okay, because that would keep anything away.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that could toxify your soil over time. So human hair is great to use in the garden, but in this case, you tend to want it from a barber rather than a beauty salon, unless they can segregate the hair.
Yeah.
Peroxide and bleach, none of that stuff is good. But it does have a very strong smell, and especially the first year, it may keep rabbits away, especially in a year that we've had where there's a lot of wild plant growth that's out of control. I'm sure you've noticed all the weeds and the woods. So if there's enough for them to eat in the wild and you've changed something, you've put a really weird smell out there, plus it wouldn't feel good on their paws, it could be effective. I will tell you the big secret about American rabbits is that they don't dig, they don't burrow. And rabbits are the easiest creatures to exclude from a garden. You can install a little, almost like Disneyland fence that doesn't even look like it does anything. It only has to be like a foot tall.
Oh, okay. I put some railroad ties in. It's about a foot tall.
Oh,
I wasn't sure.
You didn't use actual railroad ties.
No, they're not railroad ties. They're 2x6s. They're not pressure treated or anything.
Okay, good,
like that.
Good. If you find rabbits coming back in and their damage is very distinctive, then put a low fence outside it as well. I will tell you that untreated human hair is highly beneficial to the garden. This has not been an overly wet year, but in a wet and cloudy year, I don't know what you're growing, but I'm sure slugs can be a problem.
Uh-huh.
If you put human hair around your plants, slugs can't go near the plants. They get all tangled up in the hair, and it slowly strangles them. It is one of the best and most effective and, of course, free ways to control slugs. And as human hair breaks down, it turns out that we are loaded with nitrogen. And it accumulates in our hair. So not only does our hair repel certain creatures, kill slugs, as it breaks down, it's excellent plant food.
Oh, wow. I wouldn't be surprised if the hair I have in there has been treated. Should I take it out, you think?
No. I wouldn't worry about that now, because that might be one of the strange smells. Did you smell the hair when you put it down? Did it smell like a beauty parlor?
I didn't smell it, but I'm sure it does.
Yeah, guys don't have any sense of smell anyway, Nick. We can't hear either. That's what I'm told. But in the future, I would urge you to keep doing this. Just try to ask her to try to keep the hair clean. But I can see how the smell and the texture would be very repellent to rabbits. And we know it works like a charm against slugs. And it will feed your plants. Just try to steer away from the treated hair in the future, but 90% of this is really good.
Oh, wow. Sounds good.
All right, man?
All right, thanks a lot, Mike. I'll talk to you later.
Good luck, Nick.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week, which we're calling We Come Not to Bury Mulberry, But to Praise It. Alexis Landis, You Bet Your Garden producer, read this week's oh-so-interesting question, please.
Okay. Mark in North Central New Jersey writes, I caught your show for the first time recently while driving. It was very good, informative, and responsible. But part of your discussion with a woman with a mulberry tree problem left me disappointed. Yes, wildlife and birds enjoy mulberries, but so do humans. The berries are large and easily picked, you don't have to get down on the ground or deal with thorns, and the branches bend easily without breaking, bringing more of the treasures within reach. I enjoy all three types I've encountered in New Jersey. Purple, large fruits, taste a little like watermelon, not very common. White, fruits are a little smaller, very sweet, and very common. Black, the best of all, more flavor and less sweetness than the white ones. Yes, ripe mulberries can mess up a sidewalk for the first few weeks of June, but if picked and eaten instead, those 2 or 3 weeks can turn from inconvenience to joy. I think it would be great if you did a segment on these and other foods that people consider weeds or nuisances, like dandelion, lamb's quarter, and other common, easy-to-identify, safe, wild edibles. It's great to harvest from a garden you didn't plant. Thanks.
Well, I am pleased to report that extolling the merits of unappreciated plants is a regular topic on our show, Mark. There's an article called Eat Your Weedies in our A to Z archives that examines several edible wild plants that people routinely complain about. Chickweed, white clover, purslane, wild violets. And I love the so-called invasive wineberry so much that it got its very own article. And now you put mulberries on the table. One of my favorite books, Peter Del Tredici's Wild Urban Plants of the Northeast, explains that the prevalence of the originally Asian white mulberry in America is due to a silkworm breeding craze that exploded in the 1820s. The trees were grown like mad, the silkworm business never materialized, and then birds helped spread the plant even further. Del Tredici notes that these naturalized trees, the second most common, quote, weed in New York City, are excellent at erosion control, reduce the heat of paved areas in cities, survive salty and compacted soils, and provide excellent food and habitat for wildlife. But he adds that he finds the flavor of the fruits, quote, insipid. Turns out that maybe he just didn't try the fruit from enough different trees. In his latest book, Grow Fruit Naturally, frequent You Bet Your Garden guest and noted fruit expert Dr. Lee Reich describes three different varieties of mulberry that are named according to the hues of their fruits. But he warns that these designations bear little relation to the actual colors of the fruits any individual plant will produce. So at least in the north, your, quote, black and purple berries are probably just variations produced by the endless crossings and natural hybridizing of red and white mulberry trees. The true black mulberry, explains Lee, is native to Western Asia, and it's hardy only in Zone 7 and warmer, and even then only in drier areas of those climates. Lee calls it the best tasting of all mulberries, and perhaps the best tasting of all fruits. Quote, the berries have an intense flavor, as if coming from a fruit 5 times their size, and a sweetness that is offset with a perfect balance of zing. The red mulberry is actually American-born, but Lee explains that this native has been naturally hybridizing with the white Asian variety that was intensively cultivated in the 1800s for so long that there are enormous numbers of natural variations out there. As a result, the so-called white mulberry can produce fruits that are white, lavender, or black, which explains how your, quote, blackberries could appear in the north. They're probably genetic variants produced by the crossing of a white and red mulberry. Lee adds that the true black mulberries ripen much later in the season than the common red and white types, in mid to late summer as opposed to spring. Now, along with color, the flavor of the fruits can vary greatly from tree to tree in the wild. Lee has tasted some that he declared to be much too sweet, but adds that some of the red-white hybrids can have a flavor so good, It approaches that of the black type he so praises. All mulberries are edible, so once you've learned to properly identify the trees, the berries have basically the same look and shape of blackberries, you can search for the wild ones with the best taste. And unlike many so-called alien invasives, there are named cultivars available that Lee highly recommends, including Illinois Everbearing, a, quote, probable red and white hybrid whose flavor, says Lee, almost matches that of his treasured black mulberries. And for those who live in warm, dry areas with mild winters, named varieties of the true black mulberry are also available from specialty suppliers. Well, that sure was some interesting information about the much-maligned mulberry now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website, where you can read it over carefully. Just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to mash me with mulberries if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live. Please put the actual subject in the subject line. And perhaps check voiced to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solution to hundreds of garden problems in our Garden Answers A to Z section. And or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez-Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Kevin, don't call me Merv Griffin. Our webmaster is Baneful Rich Banowitz. His faithful internet companion is Sarah Kazar. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out our Facebook page and like us already. Everybody likes Alexis Landis, who produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. We still really like our new production assistant, Joanna Hatzis. Unlike anyone else is our esteemed editor, Al Banks. I'm potentially likable, Mike McGrath. You just have to catch me at the right time, like not when I'm writing or watching the Phillies lose, or battling stink bugs, or squirrels, or when the red light of death appears on the dashboard of my wife's car, or when I get one of those recorded phone calls assuring me that there are currently no problems with your credit card, or, well, maybe even when I see you next week. What's going on when a red crepe myrtle turns white? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll investigate the curious case of color change in crepe, plus your fabulous phone calls.
Next Saturday at 11 o'clock on WHYY-FM.
I'm Bob Garfield, and on this week's On the Media, we go back to talk to some of the participants in